Welcome, everybody, to episode 86 of High Tech on the Low. Omri, how are you this morning?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm really excited to have you in the studio. I feel like it's been kind of this, like, back and forth. I was in your studio. You're now in my studio. I'm with another podcaster. It's all that fun stuff. So, Omri from Omri Horowitz PR. We're going to get into that in a little bit. And in the meantime, as always, we're sponsored by Front Team with 12 different communities, 6 verticals, and 3,000 members all looking to connect. And as always, if you like what you hear, please like, subscribe, follow, all the like. And today we're going to get into the fascinating world of what is even tech PR in 2023, and also kind of the ways and in which you can move in that space and how to make it better for yourself. But I'm going to let you introduce yourself, Omri, and kind of talk a little bit about what you do. That's the magic sauce of Omri Horowitz PR. And let's get into it.
Awesome, man. So first of all, thank you so much for having me.
For sure.
For the audience that doesn't know, man, we've kind of met, I think, a few months ago, and completely hit it off. We started dating, and I'm just
kidding. I was like, my girlfriend's gonna have a little problem with that. Like,
yeah, and then you were in my show, and you know, it was a great interview. I love talking to you, so I'm really happy to be here again and talk to you again. So a little bit about myself. I own Omri Horowitz Media. We have about 20 plus PR tech clients.
Nice.
Startup clients, some of the biggest names in the industry.
Is it all different industries, kind of, or is it one in particular?
So we have different verticals. We have fintech, we have AI, which is a big one.
Nice.
We have sales tech, which is also starting to be a big one for us.
Sure.
And yeah, we have a lot of different verticals, ad tech as well, and amazing clients. And, you know, we really work with the leading startups.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of interesting because we get a sense. So our client portfolio, you know, ranges between the very early Series A startups or seed startups.
Like just getting their first round of investment. Now they're looking to get their name out there.
Exactly. Okay. And then we have some Series B startups. And we actually had even a startup with a nice exit recently who was sold to American Express, Nipendo.
Nice.
So we were with them for 2 years. And, you know, and hopefully we contributed some to this exit of theirs. So.
Well, that's a cool little feeling, right?
It
like
is,
to know that you're like part of that exit journey. Like maybe, you know, I'm not going to say you're the exit reason.
No, we are the reason. You know.
Okay, sorry. So there's,
just kidding.
There's the reason right there. But, you know, it's like amazing. I mean, listen, think about this. You're on one side. You're hitting the guys who are just getting their feet wet in entrepreneurialism, in the tech space, whatever it is. And then on the other side, you get this big exit, you know, and you get everything in between. It's pretty cool. How do you manage all that? Because it seems like everyone would have different needs, you know?
That's a great question. And just for some context, we also had clients. When we started, we had clients that were publicly traded companies.
Okay.
So we were doing
like on NASDAQ.
NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange as well. And we were doing, you know, really stock analysis articles and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's a little different.
It is super different. It is super different. So just to kind of like answer your question is, you know, the big hurdle is that every startup thinks, because, you know, every entrepreneur thinks they are the next big thing.
Right.
They have this, you know, they have this ego, they have this expectation, they have the VCs who kind of sit on their heads and kind of want to do, you know, and your job is to be able to feed that ego and help them kind of amplify their message.
100%.
But in the same time, you also want to be very gentle with them. Because
in what sense? Like in them understanding kind of like what you're actually able to provide or what their expectations are? How do you do that?
So the easy way to answer your question is to say, manage expectations, right?
Okay.
That's the easy way.
Sure.
But that's what everyone talks about. But
that's just client relationships.
That's just client relationships. But I think we're taking it a step further. And me personally, my team is very like manage client expectations,
sure,
like the politically correct and stuff. I'm not that politically correct in this ecosystem. So, you know, I kind of tell them.
Good.
Yeah.
Finally.
I kind of tell them, listen, man, you're not Mark Benioff yet.
Okay.
You're not Mark Benioff yet. There's some stuff that are proven. There's data that can, there's marketing data that we can do to help you get there.
Right.
Or close to there. But there's some stuff you're going to do by yourself. But don't act like you're him right now.
Right.
Because you're not. And it's bad for your vibe is not, it's not what we want. Right.
So.
It's really important to be.
That's interesting. That's kind of keeping the founder a little bit in reality.
It is. And be a little bit aggressive with him sometimes and be a bit pushy. And it's not only with aggressive founders. actually the founders, which I find it more difficult to work with,
okay,
but it's still, it's a good learning lesson for me and for the team,
sure,
and for them as well, is actually with the very relaxed founders.
Okay.
Because a lot of founders, you know, especially ones who come from the with a tech background, sure, and not, you know, no, with a business background, they don't understand how important PR is.
Right. Because they just want to build all day. They just want to make their product. Leave them alone. Right.
That's what they want to do. They want to build their products. And they want their products to be like PLG, product-led growth. They want it. They want to say, okay, my product is so good. We're much better than the competitors. So just give you an example.
Sure.
You know, in kickoff calls, you know, you have them as well.
Of course.
Clients start, you know, when clients start talking a lot about their products and a lot about how better they are than competitors, I always tell them, like, listen, guys, I'm not your client. I'm not like a client. You're
right.
My client.
Right.
You know,
you're not selling to me.
I don't care, you know, if your competitor's product is actually much better than yours. I don't really give a shit. It's how we make more noise than your competitors, how we position you guys, how we... And I feel like that a lot of people, they get very sensitive and emotional about it. And
like, kind of like, you don't care about me.
Yeah, you don't care about me. I worked, you know, I worked in the garage for 2 years on this.
I haven't seen my wife in 2 months, you know. Yeah, right, you know.
Exactly, okay. Right? And then, like, I feel like, and then I kind of tell them, listen, guys, I understand what you're thinking right now, because sometimes they don't verbalize it. But, you know, but they're like, this is what we work with tons of startups.
Right.
So remember, I don't feel what you're feeling, but I see what you don't see.
Okay.
Which is the whole landscape, which is the whole ecosystem, sure, which is how, you know,
bird's eye view of kind of the media talking about it, the monitoring.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. And I have with me, there's a better chance of you actually fulfilling that dream of yours. But you need to let me lead the way where we need to lead the way, and I'll let you lead the way where you have the capacity to do so.
That's kind of, you know, it's reminding them why they even came to you in the first place.
Exactly.
Right? You know, it's kind of like delegating, you know, like, you are good at making X. I'm good at PR. Let me help you. You know what I mean? And I think that's real. Now, you know, one of the things that I found very interesting about how you vision, you know, kind of have your vision about PR, we can say, or comms.
That sounds good.
You know, whatever you want to call it, really. You know, you have this vision, and it's very, what I really like is you're very data-based. And not only are you very data-based, you're focused on that type of information because it gives you credible information, credible, you know, KPIs and everything like that. What do you find to be kind of your, you know, I mentioned before, like, special sauce. But what is your, like, really special kind of proposition that you give to your clients, especially as a, you know tech. You do know it. You know how to use it. And what are you giving to your tech clients that's, say, different than just another PR firm out there?
100%. Love this question, because it helps us show our USP. So, you know, it's like tennis. You're giving me a nice ball to swing.
Lob it right over.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So listen, it's kind of simple. It's simple, but it's not easy.
Okay. That was hard for you to say, too. So is it simple? You know, no, okay.
You can laugh at me later on. Okay. So basically it's this. Traditional media, traditional PR is basically like real estate brokers.
Okay.
Okay. They come to their clients and they tell their clients, hey, give me a good story to tell the media. Mm-hmm. Then they take that story and they give it to the reporters and they say, hey, this is a nice story.
Okay.
If the reporters say, you know, fuck that, this is not a good story.
Right.
Then basically that a PR agency or agent goes back to the client and tells them, hey, give me a better story. We need a bigger story. And what does a big story count in tech PR? It's super simple. It's founding announcements,
okay,
product, like exits.
Okay. Product launches, I imagine.
But not as you might think.
Really?
Even that is not such a big story.
Okay.
So it's basically only like, it's basically just to simplify, it's basically all the financial aspects that happen inside tech.
So money.
So money.
Okay.
So it's VCs, it's funding, it's selling, it's valuations.
Raisings, okay.
Raising, sure. Yeah, those kind of stuff. So that's basically it. And then we came in, and I came into this industry, and from actually being on the writing side. So I wrote for Forbes and Times of Israel, which I still write for them, and had my podcast and everything, and I saw how this industry is being managed. And I have an advertising background,
sure.
So I also know data-driven analytics and stuff like that.
So you have the qualitative and the quantitative together,
basically. Exactly. Uh-huh. And then I said, "Wow, there's a big hole in this industry. Why? Because PR companies are really good communicators, but boy, oh boy, they're terrible marketers." So then I came in and I said, wow, there needs to be a modern PR agency that is data driven and that provides reporters with incentives and value because they want clicks, they want traffic, right. And provides the companies and the startups actual articles and media coverage that focuses on their actual products, on their actual USP, on their actual,
behind the money, in a sense.
Exactly. Right. So we still do funding announcements. We still do those stuff.
Sure.
But they're just a part of the overall strategy of modern PR to amplify their message. And not to get too technical, we basically we use a lot of data-driven insights to incentivize reporters to write about companies.
So, like, what do you mean? Like, I mean, obviously, I know we need to, you know, be a little careful what we talk about here. But, like, you know, more like, you know, are you looking at it and you're saying, okay, guys, like, listen, we know that, you know, let's say articles on generative AI are hot right now. Mm-hmm. So here's your generative AI article about one of our companies who works in that.
Similar to that. So basically, we have an analytics platform.
Okay.
We're able to fetch data on every single article in the world.
Okay.
Almost every. So basically, let's say we get in, one of our clients gets an article on Newsbreak. So we're able to fetch that article and see what that article did in terms of viewership, in terms of how people shared it on open social, which is Twitter and Facebook.
Okay.
And then on how people shared it on dark social, which is LinkedIn and WhatsApp.
Okay.
And Facebook Messenger, actually. So basically, we get this data. We understand what storylines work better and not only what trends work better, but what storylines, you know, work better in terms of social media and when they share it on social media.
Okay.
Because, you know, a lot of people read the headlines, as you know, and they don't actually read the articles. It's really important to know how they perform on socials.
Of course.
And then we take that data and then we incentivize reporters and tell them, listen, we have a really good story that fits this genre. And you can see what Newsbreak did with this. You can see what, you know, TechCrunch did with this.
Hmm.
Maybe your audience can leverage that as well. Maybe you can leverage that with your audience.
So you're kind of finding them opportunities, actually, and almost giving them the value.
Exactly. You know what? This is a great thing. So basically, we see ourselves.
Uh-huh.
The main client is the reporter, not the startup.
That's so interesting. I was going to just say, I was like, it's like you're giving them the business.
Exactly.
You're saying like, I want you to be a successful writer. Write about this, though.
My clients are the reporters. And then it's a positive snowball effect, right?
I like that.
Because we feed them. Then their incentive to, you know, there's an incentive there for mutual collaboration. And then they know we bring them clicks. So they see themselves not only as we're bringing them stories, they see us as an avenue to amplify their own brand as writers.
Right. Right.
So basically that's kind of the gist of the whole thing.
It's your whole ecosystem play. I love it.
Ecosystem,
you know, it goes back to what we even talked about on your podcast, which is like this whole ecosystem that you're about. I love it. I think it's really interesting. Now, I'm going to ask kind of a hard question. What do you tell, you know, entrepreneurs when they need to understand PR? Because, you know, you brought up such an important part before, which is like, you know, you have these guys who sit in a room who don't know anything. They just want to, you know, they're just expecting, they're like the Albert Einsteins of the world. And they're like, hey, my work speaks for itself, right? What do you tell them? You know, what do you tell them about PR to actually get them to understand? Listen, you need this. And in a sense, you know, it's kind of like, would you tell any entrepreneur out there right now? Why do you need PR?
Well, it's a good question. And it's a simple one because, you know, they need PR. First of all, if most 90% of entrepreneurs, they have competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly, you know, their competitors are already doing some form of PR and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And with those type of competitors, I just look, you know, in like a prospecting call, I just tell them, look what your competitors are doing. Don't you want to like fucking sure. dominate your industry?
Yeah.
Don't you want to like,
it's almost like common sense.
Yeah. Don't you want like to kick ass? Right. Like, and that's an easy sell. And then there's the entrepreneurs, the other 10% probably who are like first to market. And then that pitch would basically be, hey, don't you want to own your category?
Sure.
And then I very simply, we have templates for this. I show them examples of how companies who were first to launch, basically they were the first in this category. How, because they haven't done marketing and haven't done really good PR, how competitors that were that came in maybe a decade later have been able to win this market just by dominating marketing and PR.
So just like how kind of the original, like you could say the OGs on the block, basically they lost their market share.
Exactly.
Simply because of the fact that they didn't invest.
Did you read 0-1?
Of course. So, Peter Thiel? Of course, man.
Of course. So Peter Thiel, he wrote, he talked about that sometimes the last mover wins.
Right.
And why that is because, and he wrote that book. I don't remember when it was published, but it was not in recent years.
No.
Why was that? Because it's very simple. And I might be biased a bit, but the growth hackers and growth marketers who helped those startups, those last movers, become the leading ones, were very advanced. So imagine, like, in the start of the 90s, you know, startups, there were startups, but they didn't have, like, growth marketing tactics and stuff. And then a startup in the late, in this early
you could even say by 2008, yeah, right? They have Facebook and they can start pushing themselves on
Facebook,
right?
So Facebook had incredible growth marketing hacks and tactics. And they were able to dominate, MySpace.
MySpace, that's right. Right.
But MySpace was first, but Facebook had better marketing, had better PR.
And they gave me the ecosystem to push my product. Right?
Exactly. And then it's a self-sustaining kind of ecosystem.
Right.
So that's,
we won't get into now what they're doing, but we can move on. But no, but you're right. I think it's very true what you're saying, and kind of the last mover and how they move. And it's a really good sales push. I hope you use Peter Thiel all the time. You should probably give him some kickback, I'm saying.
Yes.
No, but I'm joking. But
he doesn't need me.
Right. I would say. But so, you know, now I want to kind of move the discussion a little bit, which is that, you know, one of the other things that you do in the ecosystem is you write a lot. You know, you yourself as Omri are a writer, which I think is a very cool thing, how you're able to leverage kind of your personal brand with also your professional brand. And I think that's very unique. Now, one of the things you've done there is you've really been trying to understand how to give writers, because I'm sure you felt it, like, kind of a voice. Now, what are some of the ways that you feel that you've been able to kind of help the ecosystem grow through your voice?
Awesome. So I'll for context for the audience that doesn't know, I write for, you know, all these major publications, Yale Finance, NASDAQ, TeepRanks, Entrepreneur, HackerNoon, really all the Newsbreak, Times of Israel, really all the big ones. Now, everything that we do for our clients, not everything, but a lot of it, we tried them on myself as well. So I'm like the guinea pig of PR for myself.
That's cool.
And so basically we're testing out everything on my brand, and then we see how well. And this is...
That's a lot of vulnerability.
It is. Branding has to start with the CEO. That's the brand. The brand is the CEO. Amazon, Jeff Bezos. Salesforce, Mark fucking Benioff.
Right.
Right? Oracle, Larry Ellison.
Facebook, Zuck.
Facebook, Zuckerberg. Right. Tesla, Elon Musk.
Right.
He might be...
Okay, Dorsey for Twitter.
You know? Dorsey, Jack right. Dorsey for Twitter. And then I can go in and say even more specific...
No, but you're right. It's the CEO at the end of the day.
This is it's a CEO game, and CEOs don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is, a lot of these teams that start working with us, a lot of these startups, they spend so much money on building the LinkedIn company page of the company.
Right.
And they spend so much money on the blog pages on their website. And they spend so much time on you know, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, you know, we get a big PR piece for this company, and the CEO won't share it on his personal LinkedIn
drives me nuts.
And he doesn't share it on his Twitter, and he doesn't do thought leadership, and he thinks thought leadership is doing one article a month. And, you know, there's this client of us, I'm not going to mention by name, but we got them this big contributor position in this really tailored publication for them. You know, and there's this sense that they're always writing thought leadership content for them. And a few weeks ago, I look and I see they only have two fucking articles.
And how long have they been with them?
For 6 months.
Two articles in 6 months?
Two articles on that thought leadership spot. So imagine how hard we needed to work to secure that position and how much pitching we do. And then all they need to do is write things that are already, quote unquote, supposed to be experts on.
Sure.
And they don't do that. And they just don't do that.
It's kind of like leaving almost the low-hanging fruits and then just not taking them, right?
It's exactly that, and I tell you exactly why that is, okay? And I'm telling you this because I've been paying attention to this, and I've been studying this for 3 months.
Okay.
3 months that we've been talking weekly, my team, about why this is happening. It's because of this.
Do you think it's a noise play? Do you think it's like there's just too much noise out there?
No, I tell you exactly why that is. It's not most of entrepreneurs today...
Mm.
They don't have the capacity to do deep work. They're playing what I call the WhatsApp and emails game. They're just 90% of their day is doing WhatsApps and emails with everyone. Go do this for me. Do this for me. Do this. And they're not able to just sit and do the work. sit and write a LinkedIn post. Mm. And then even if they don't do that, they also don't have other people who can do that for them.
Like they're not delegating it if they can't do it, and they're not doing it themselves.
Because you're delegating. Okay, this will be very blunt, but this is, I think you will agree with me.
Go ahead.
Okay, if you're a strong marketer, you're exceptionally strong marketer.
Sure.
You would usually not be an in-house marketer in a startup.
100%. Because you could do it yourself.
You will do it yourself, or you'll be a CEO of a startup.
Okay. Because you understand how to market your own product. You understand how to build the business. Okay.
Exactly.
That sounds logical. Definitely logical.
Look at Vilner and Walnut.
Sure. Right.
I'm a bit biased to say, but look at them. Right? Okay. So the idea is that, you know, if you're a strong marketer, so basically, you're delegating your marketing, which is the most important thing outside of your product, to people who are not strong enough marketers. And then you're mad at the marketing team.
It's like kind of like a reaffirming cycle of everyone's working poorly, but you're not leading. You know what I mean? You're not leading the marketing, you know?
Exactly. And that's super weird, right? If you're not a technical CEO and you're not in the market, you're not doing marketing, what are you doing?
Just raising money? Just sending emails and WhatsApps, it sounds
like. Just WhatsApps and emails. Right. And there's not much, okay, let me just for context. So the really strong entrepreneurs, Jack Dorsey's of the world, the Elon Musk's of the world, the ones who already have more than, let's say, $200 million in their bank.
Okay.
Not net worth. Right. In their bank.
Okay.
They have super leverage that by doing 5 WhatsApps a day, they can make things happen. But the smaller entrepreneurs who are not there yet, who might be there one day, but they're not there yet.
Right.
They don't have that leverage. No amount of WhatsApps and emails will fix that for you.
Right.
You need to do deep work. You understand? You need to do deep work.
I think this is like most value that I'm hearing on the podcast in a while. This is great. I'm serious.
Love it.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm not bullshitting. No, I'm saying real things. This is real things that I've watched close hand. And, you know, there was this client of us, who's still a client of ours. He's a friend also. That inside a meeting, we were doing a meeting. And I told him, listen, man, why are we having those meetings? And you're doing this. And I see you
on your phone.
I see you on your phone. Okay. I see you in the. Why aren't you able to sit and do deep work? And you know what his answer was for me?
What did he say?
There was no answer.
He didn't have an answer?
He didn't.
He was just like, okay, you're right.
He said, I should put it in on the calendar. You're right. I should put it on the calendar. Like as a, you know.
Like a block of time, like 3 hours a day from 9 to 12, I'm working.
But he doesn't do that.
Uh-huh.
And he won't do that. Uh-huh. He will never do that.
That's so interesting. That's so interesting that you bring this up too, because I think there really is, you know, it comes to a kind of a deeper discussion about, I'd almost say like entrepreneurial mental health in certain ways and kind of how we value things and our time right now in society. But, you know, it's very real because at the end of the day, you're saying something very right, which is that, you know, even in my own podcast, I can tell you, even in my own podcast, you know, podcast is a great opportunity. You're getting an opportunity to talk about yourself, right? And talk about what you do and why. Like I asked you your USP, basically. I literally asked you that question. I'm giving you the opportunity. I'm giving you the floor. And yet people don't share it. They don't share. They don't share articles. They don't share articles in major publications. They don't share the episode that's on all these platforms and easy for everyone to look at. And you know, it's not. And I used to also think. I used to wonder. I was like, why? Why is this an ego game? Do they not understand? And then I realized. I think people just don't understand how to market. I don't think they understand. And as you say, I even think you even bring another whole perspective, which is this. People may not actually know how to just sit down and do work.
They,
you know,
they don't.
They'd rather tell, you know, almost in a sense, text their accountant saying, how much money do I have in the bank account, right? To be able to hire someone else new than to just say, let me just, you know, 5 minutes on the train right now, or even in, you know, you're sitting on the toilet, just write a LinkedIn post.
It's 5 minutes. Five minutes, man.
You can even now, you have AI, just type it in there. Just be like, hey, I need to write a fun, catchy title about this, with that, the next thing, you know, add three points and boom, we're good.
I have a question for you, Jordan. So ChatGPT.
Sure.
Right. Do you think there's going to be more content out there with ChatGPT?
Ooh.
Well, there's an easy answer for that, which is yes. Fuck yes.
Yeah.
I'm not that sure.
I'm not sure. And I'll tell you the truth why. I think there's a game here that, unfortunately, with ChatGPT, it's kind of like a dumbing down and a useful tool, right? Because now people will rely too heavily on it and they're not going to be able to do their own original content. It's like a friend of mine the other day, you know what he said to me? He's like, Jordan, do you journal? And I was like, every now and again. He was like, don't stop now. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, with ChatGPT, you have AI, you're going to lose your voice. And I was like, whoa. Like, I didn't even think about that. I was like, wow, you're right. I could just send everything to ChatGPT, not worry about it, and I'll lose my voice. And I said, you know what? People are going to start losing original content. And it's going to start being replaced and redone, and it's never going to be the same. Now, you could say the same thing now, right? Everything's recycled. Everything's repurposed. But repurposing with originality is different than just, you know, using AI.
Everything is repurposed today, man. Everything.
Right.
Like every hack, everything, everything started, you know, from Renaissance.
Code to this, you know, yeah, right.
So that's basically it. But I think it's just the habit of creating content. It needs to be a habit. A lot of entrepreneurs just don't have that habit, and it's sad. And even their marketing teams don't have that habit, which is also kind of sad. But I think there's so many, like, to be, I laid out a lot of critics. I was very critical in this conversation. But I'm also very positive that, you know, that with the right assertiveness and the right aggression by people like me, by people like you, then it will push entrepreneurs. And I'll give you another thing. And this is a very important one. A lot of entrepreneurs today are people who are the young entrepreneurs. They know they need to market the shit out of their products.
Right.
The young ones, you know, the 30-year-olds.
Yeah, because they get it.
They get it.
They grow up in the age.
Exactly. So I'm not worried about them. So and they're going to be the ones who are going to lead the next renaissance of tech PR and the next renaissance of startups.
Sure.
So they know, you know, that if they want to build a great company, it has to have a media company attached to it as well.
Okay. I like that. I think that's also kind of an element too that goes on to the whole idea of, you know, content being the game right now. And in a sense, like, it doesn't matter who you are. You have to be your own tech company, right? Your media company, right?
Exactly.
You know, you have to be. Which I think we're getting towards the end of the discussion, and I want to ask, you know, about kind of some new and improved developments that you've kind of had working on. Because, you know, you've really given, I think, a ton of value as to why people need to get into PR, what's important about your making your own content and stuff. What are you working on right now? You know, share with us at home kind of what are some of these projects that you have going right now that are, let's say, moving the whole ecosystem forward.
Love it. So first of all, I'm a capitalist.
Good.
I'm big on capitalism.
Okay.
I believe capitalism has done wonders to the world and has been the pillar to innovation and everything. So unlike other PR firms, we are not only a PR firm, we own media.
Okay.
So we own media. We have equity in publications.
Cool.
And we have our own publications that we have 100% equity at, that we own everything.
Sure.
Like House of Ventures,
okay.
Which is a new publication. Like my YouTube channel, sure, has 50,000 subs. Like our LinkedIn, my LinkedIn profile, almost 28,000 subs. So like this are all assets that we own,
okay,
basically. And the thing about why is this important is because we want to control the ecosystem,
sure,
from all sides,
sure,
and do it in a really nice way,
right,
but also very in a very effective way for us. Because remember, capitalism, and the more we do something that's benefiting for us, the more it benefits our clients, the more it benefits our clients, the more it benefits our clients' clients.
So, and the whole ecosystem.
And the whole ecosystem is a
sustaining system.
100%. And so I'll just talk about House of Ventures, which I think is a very special project. House of Ventures is made to be a decentralized media publication that is owned by us, but actually every contributor on the publication gets to monetize his own content separately from the main entity, which is us.
Okay.
So for example, we have you, for example, on there. We have other contributors. We have about 60 contributors today.
Nice.
And basically what House of Ventures lets them is, so the distribution is centralized. There's subscribers that subscribe to House of Ventures. And the column that you have and everyone else has, they can monetize their own content. Let me explain how this works. Let's say an advertiser, who sponsors this show?
Front Team.
So they can basically, you can basically add their logo or an advertising about them on your actual column on House of Ventures, and we can say anything about it, and you get 100% of the money.
Nice.
Right? So then you can basically build your audience on House of Ventures audience, and then
And
monetize it without us taking any fees out of it, without us even talking to you about it. You can do whatever you want. And I feel like that is a big thing. So for some context, what happened was Forbes, they had a lot of contributors.
Right.
And a lot of, they wouldn't let their contributors monetize their columns. So they would write these columns and they would get, I don't know, a few hundred dollars to every article. And basically what happened is contributors started to monetize their content and then they kicked them out. Forbes kicked them out. And then basically when I talked to those contributors and I told them, hey, but wasn't just Forbes worth writing for Forbes just for your brand? They said, you know what? Not really. And the start it was. Wow,
really? Yeah,
because in the start it was. Okay. In the start it was. But then social media became so explosive that, you know, those TikTok shorts and YouTube shorts and those LinkedIn posts and Twitter.
Were good enough for them.
Those Twitter threads actually gave them more, you know, more eyeballs than the actual Forbes article.
Interesting.
So now they said, okay, Forbes doesn't let me monetize. Let's just move this to a Substack or to something else. And let's monetize this. And, I'll take care of my own audience.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So, and then basically you took that model and you said, let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's basically we say Forbes and Twitter had a baby and then House of Ventures was born.
I like that. I love that. I will also say I love writing for you guys for this reason, because I think it's very unique. And it's also what I like to do is kind of get involved in the innovation trend. And this is very innovative to me. So
I'll ask you something, Jordan.
Sure.
Wouldn't that you wrote for another publication in Israel?
We won't get into it, but yes.
Okay. How, you know, you took your time and wrote for them articles and you really gave it your whole, you know, and you really built it in an audience. And then they took that platform out of your.
It feels terrible. You feel abandoned. Terrible. You feel betrayed. Everything, you know.
Exactly. And the whole point with House of Ventures is that there is no way we can do that for you because you own it. You don't own the large entity, but you do own your own column. So basically, that will never happen to you.
And that, in my opinion, to be very honest, is even the future of media, is the idea of individualized ownership in that level. Now, Omri, this has been an amazing conversation. I really appreciate you being on the show. I feel like this has been incredible value. If anyone listens to this, you know, they're going to immediately sense that value. And I really appreciate you being on the show. And as always, we'll be in touch with continued work and continued collaborations, and good luck with House of Ventures. As always, you can catch my article and Omri's on there as well. Please subscribe, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks, man. Thank you so much for doing this.